Happy Christmas, everybody. This is the third day of Christmas, right?
Fourth day.
25th, 26th, 27th. Fourth day of Christmas. I don't remember what the fourth day of Christmas is.
No, me neither. I'd have to go through the whole song.
Four geese a laying? I don't know.
No, I think it's three geese a laying.
And it's five golden rings. Everyone knew that one.
Seven swans a swimming.
Four billionaires a dying. Wait, that's a little.
Four billionaires stealing your money. Maybe that's what it is.
Four billionaires a guillotined. Is that can I use that as a verb? I don't even know. Anyways, this is episode 144 of Transmission, and it's December 28th.
Ooh, hey, fourth day of Christmas, episode 144.
What? And four is my number.
Whoa. Oh, four is your number?
It's my number. Okay. So I'm Mark Van Sudek. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. And Alan has said that it's four calling birds.
Four robot birds?
Ooh. It's robot bird day.
Yeah, and then Gus points out it's also the 30th month of 2020. That sounds about right. So
we're back after our little Christmas break.
Yeah, and before our New Year's break. I only got a couple days. I can't remember if we're doing 2 or 3 days this week, but it's not a full week for us. But the big news is yesterday, Sunday, the third day of Christmas, Donald Trump signed the new bill into law that allocates $900 billion for relief, and then another couple billion, almost a trillion, for just all the other stuff. It's all smushed together.
Yeah, the basic government funding.
Yeah, it includes military stuff, a couple billion for his wall. Some of the stuff in there makes sense. Like there's relief for like stuff for post offices and healthcare things. And so it's not all bad, but if you compare this with the fact that just the American billionaires have gained $1 trillion in wealth in the last year,
right?
It kind of becomes clear who the system is made for.
Well, and it's actually not the military. The military was a separate bill that he still has not signed. And that's almost another $1 trillion, right? And, you know, and I think this isn't specifically our topic, but I do think it's a really important thing because I've seen a lot of people posting these posts about, you know, Australians have been getting $1,000 a month, you know, Canadians have been getting $1,000 a month or whatever, you know, that all these other countries have been giving a lot more relief money throughout the pandemic and than America. And they're like, why is that? You know, America is so stingy, blah, 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 which is true. But what people do not attach to these things, which I really feel like is the key unspoken issue, is that when you're spending $700 billion a year on weapons, you have less money for other stuff. you know all these other countries are not spending anywhere close to the amount of money on military, certainly not from an absolute point of view, but also even from a proportional point of view. Right, as percentage of total government spending, there is nobody that spends anywhere close. Right, even our great new rivals, right, you know, China, our great old rival Russia, they don't spend any money on weapons compared to us.
No, so and we spend a ton on military, and then the stuff we spend on other things is often weirdly inefficient because capitalism is somehow more efficient, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Inefficient and paltry.
Yeah. Well, and then, it's a combo. So we spend a lot on the military. That's the one thing we know about. We also spend on stuff like in a sideways way. So we end up, it's like one of these big tricks that somehow we're like, we can't afford healthcare, even though overall it'll probably be cheaper. And somehow there's still money being generated by healthcare, but it goes to like companies. So the United States government runs interference so that we end up paying more for things. So there's that whole dynamic in all kinds of industries. And then we don't tax our rich the way we should. And then, you know, of course, Republicans say that, well, we can't raise taxes as though everyone's taxes would go up. We're like, no, let's just increase the tax rate for really rich people. So there's all kinds of stuff happening. And the Congress generally serves to maintain that order, even in this bill. Right. Like there's stuff that helps people, but it's like such a drop in the bucket. Like if we had only had FDR era marginal tax rate, can you imagine how much of that $1 trillion in new just billionaire wealth? We're not even talking about just millionaire wealth. We're talking about billionaire wealth. Right. If we just tax that at a reasonably sane rate, oh my God, we could like maybe afford, I don't know, not dying young. We could afford all kinds of stuff.
Well, yeah, because you look at somebody like Donald Trump, and you know, of course, everybody was ripping on him because this got revealed. Mm-hmm. But I'd be willing to bet that it would be exactly the same for Bezos and, you know, all these other people. You know, he paid $750 in federal taxes. Right. And, you know, this is what happens, right, is that all these folks are able to write off all of this money as investment. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not very complicated. You know, people make it out like it's really complicated and confusing. It's actually not that complicated. I mean, they're able to write off all this money as business investment. And so, you know, it's the way that all these companies are always, quote, losing money, even as they're generating billions of dollars for the people that own them.
And it's, you know, but somewhere out there, there's one family who's going to get their $600 check, one person that was paid for by Donald Trump's taxes. So thank you, Donald Trump. He did. It's a one for one.
That's right. Part. One for one.
No, this is the other. You know, there's. You can bring in this the way in which, you know, like there's been reports that come out. None of this matters. People just don't believe this. Even if you, no matter who does report that this idea of trickle down economics, it's not a surprise. And yet another study says that's BS. Right. Because you know, obviously, if you give people money, they're going to use it to like. Create jobs. They're not going to use it like Elon Musk is spending millions of dollars to escape the matrix. Like, because he's one of these people who believe that this is all a simulation. I'm like, dude, if it's a simulation, you're in it. You can't escape it with technology because your technology is part of the simulation. So, like, why are you spending anything to escape the matrix? Never mind the fact he's also spending millions, maybe billions, on escaping the Earth with. So like these are things that are really not generating for the common good. This idea that the rich give to the common good is BS. Like even this, even everyone's golden child, Bill Gates, there's a new article about how all this money he's pouring into things actually hasn't helped close the gap between rich and poor, but it's actually exacerbated the problem. We have these sorts of things that happen, but we still believe that, okay, we need to stimulate the economy, as though the economy is this abstract ideal that's way out there, that if you give money to the rich people who are guardians of the economy, it will, their beneficence will fall upon us. And so we're seeing that now, like with this bill where we get $600. And if you complain about it, just go out there and complain about it on the internet. People will say you're ungrateful. It's better than nothing. And so like this, none of this belongs to us. Like the fact that you're not living in a dirt pile, starving to death, you should be grateful. And anything they give you, that's above and beyond. How dare you?
Right. Hashtag grateful. Hashtag blessings.
Hashtag blessed life. Yeah.
Well, and in terms of the theme of the pandemic revealing things, right? I think that, one of the many things that it has revealed, you know, is how the people in Washington do not work for us. They just don't work for us, you know, and know, a report came out that, you know, Mitch McConnell was at some billionaire luncheon the other day and, you know, said, we are not going to pass any Democratic bill now in this next administration. And, you know, Lindsey Graham is suddenly like, oh, we have to start worrying about the deficit and we have to stop spending. You know, and I mean, basically, and again, and I keep getting back to the defense bill, which is the big thing that nobody wants to talk about. I mean, you talk about getting slammed on the internet. Just go out there and suggest that the American military should be cut in half. Right. And suddenly
we're the largest military in the world if we cut ourselves in half. That's the bizarre
thing. Yes, right.
We'd still be the biggest.
We'd still be the biggest by far. Right. And it's all the, oh my God, hashtag support the troops, hashtag, you know, America love it or leave it is what you get slammed with. I mean, every single person in Congress basically is in support of continuing military spending at the level we're spending it now, except, you know, for Bernie Sanders and AOC and a couple of other folks.
The other folks.
You know, and so again, these people that we send, I mean, we're voting for them, right? I mean, Kentucky, right, a state that has been absolutely eviscerated by you know, strip mining, by all kinds of capitalist things, they keep sending Mitch McConnell back to Washington. And these people work for the folks that are getting the vast majority of the stimulus money, right? And vast majority of everything, of all the money, and the vast majority of the breaks on everything, right? I mean, you talk about marginal tax rates. I mean, you know, capital gains taxes are now down to what, like 12% or something? Maybe they're 15%. I mean, there's all separate side of the tax form where you just like, this is the cheapo tax side. You know, the people that are making the most money, they get their own special cheapo side of the tax form. Mm-hmm.
Some comments coming in. Gus writes, he's always got information for us. He's our information czar. There's perhaps an apocryphal Henry Ford quote about how if he had to pay a single red cent in taxes, then his accountant wasn't doing his job.
Right.
Henry Ford was a piece of crap, so I don't doubt he said that and maybe worse things. He was fascist, so.
Yeah.
Screw that guy.
Absolutely.
Tony asks if this was a rhetorical question, like who does it serve? Yes. It was rhetorical. We all know how we were going to answer that question. Tyler writes, have you seen Larry Summers' recent comments? No, I don't even know who that is.
Yes. Yeah, so he's one of the big economist guys that Joe Biden wants to nominate. Is he for Treasury Secretary? Anyway, one of the people, he's on the Joe Biden side of the equation.
Why, you know what? I want to live long enough to see some sort of new administration where someone like Richard Wolff, the Marxist economist, becomes Secretary of Treasury. Like, that'd be great instead of these guys. $2,000 stimulus checks would be a serious mistake that could overheat the economy.
Yes.
Like global warming because of spending too much.
Global warming because people could pay rent. And then they'd be inside, they'd be heating their apartment, and that would help increase global warming. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's what would do it.
We need more people out in tents so that they heat less.
But not in our parks.
Not in our parks.
We need to clear them out of our parks if they're...
Yes, yeah.
You know, actually, if you can't afford rent, you should just die. That's the message that is actually broadcast over and over again in our society, that there's nowhere you should be except for like maybe a shelter.
You know, and I've got a great story about this actually. So when I was in junior high, I got into speech and debate for a while. And so for those of you that are aware of debating, the way that works in the junior high and high school level, is that each year there is a topic for the whole country. So there's one topic, and so that every team is preparing on that topic. Now, there's also a division that's like the spoof division, right? So in the regular division, you're actually supposed to seriously debate the topic. But then there's also like the joke division where you can just use any crazy argument you want. So one year, the topic was poverty. And, and so people would debate about government programs and how do you get rid of poverty and everything. But then these friends of mine entered in the spoof division, and their argument for their division was kill the poor. That's how you eliminate poverty. Now, it was not lost on me that these were kids that went to a very rich prep school. It's sort of interesting that they came up with that. But the fact is, that season they went undefeated. I mean, there was no way to beat that argument. Like, if you want to eliminate poverty, as soon as you find a poor person, you just kill them. And then you never have poverty because you never have poor people. If we look at the way this pandemic has been dealt with, that's essentially been the American approach. It's just, poor people, old people, quote, expendable frontline workers, we just let them die. And, then that's going to cost us less and they're replaceable. That's a better way to go than actually try to deal with the pandemic in a helpful way. And so, yeah, Larry Summers, and again, he's part of the Biden camp. He's not a Trump person. His idea, like, why would you give that much money to poor people? Like, that would be terrible for the economy.
Neoliberals gonna neolib, yeah. It reminds me of my dad was trying to be a missionary in Belize and when he retired. And there's all sorts of funny stories about this. One of them is which he tried to learn Spanish. And so he practiced Spanish for us. And he literally say, hola, senor. Then he found out he did not know that Belize was a crown colony. So they don't speak Spanish, English, because it was a crown colony. He got there.
That's great.
People kind of want to help him. And at first he gave them like $20 to do stuff that he'd paid $20 here. And then he realized that, wait, that's too much. So like, if you give them so much money, they won't know what to do with it. So then he started doing like a, 50 cents or whatever. But like this logic, like, whoa, I can't give them my money because they wouldn't even know what to do with it. This sort of logic that he had as the colonizer with what the people he called the little brown people, literally without irony, is kind of just how these economists talk.
Although I could see if he tried to explain all that to them in Spanish, they might be confused.
Si, senor. So we're talking about money, just a little commercial plug. Yeah. So this is now you can listen to this as a podcast, wherever podcasts are found. Just search Transmission and either Dan Wolpert or Mark Van Suenk will show up in most of the major podcasty places. And also, like, you can donate money to us to help pay the bills. You can go to micapraise.org/connect/donate or cpimn.org/support for those who are listening. Yeah.
But don't give us too much because we might overheat.
Yeah, we don't know. We wouldn't know what to do with it. Ceres writes, no, the people in Washington don't care about us or the world. Generally speaking, not really.
Yeah. No.
I mean, you can say this is where people always like to appeal towards things like intentions and people's hearts, which to me is a wasted exercise. Look at what people do. If a system doesn't show concern for poor people, then it doesn't care for poor people. If a system doesn't show concern for the world, it doesn't care about the world. Yes, we might vote for individuals. We might say AOC or Bernie Sanders or Ilhan or any of these folks care if we know them based on their actions. Like, I don't care at all about people's sentiments when it comes to how a system functions. And so It's just one of the ways to get gamed by the system.
And by the way, speaking of caring, it's Siri's birthday today. So that's happy right. birthday.
Happy yeah, birthday,
happy Siri's. Birthday. You get 4 robot birds for your birthday.
Nice. For the 4th day of Christmas.
That's right.
Series also writes, the ruling class and their enablers get all the money, yet everyday people, small businesses, and civic community institutions get nada, which is a word my father learned, nada. Went off to evangelize the belief people.
Well, and that's one of the things about these stimulus bills that, you know, that people are documenting is that, you know, the vast majority of the money is going to wealthy people, either big companies, corporations, right? All these mega pastors, there's been a lot of stuff. You know, all these mega pastors have applied for all this PPP money, right? You know, what's his name? Olstein down in Houston got $4.4 million. This other guy got a few million dollars and bought a jet because, you know, you need a jet to flee the pandemic if you're a Christian pastor. Mm-hmm. I never got a jet. Did you ever get a jet when you were pastoring full time?
No, I don't think
no.
so.
We no. weren't doing it right.
No. I don't understand why the things we talk about haven't gone super mainstream and made us a huge following. Kathleen writes, your spoof argument hits home with me. My mother thinks we should not vaccinate people in nursing homes because they are just wasting air. Kathleen. You always
have I'm so sorry. That person is your mother.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. What's the phrase from Scrooge? Decrease the surplus population.
Yeah.
By the way, just because I have to mention this, there was this opinion piece from the Wall Street Journal, which is esteemed amongst all papers, where they built a case like in defense of Scrooge.
Seriously? Not
ironically at all.
Because they didn't get that it wasn't a joke. They didn't think they were being ironic.
I'm sure they had like there's a tongue in cheekness to him as their springboard, but then their basic argument was for basically defense of the rich.
Of Scrooge, right.
Yeah. Of our modern day Scrooges. Sarah, it's also so insulting that everyday people are told that to deny their own pleasure and joy and underpaying, dishonoring labor is somehow a way to cut expenses and budget. Well, damn those puritanical sadists.
Yeah. Yeah, no, seriously, this is a really great thing. And this comes up all the time, you know, and I've seen this in the church world all the time in relation to charitable giving, right? Is that, you know, somebody will see someone, a family or something, and they'll see like, oh my gosh, this person has one pleasurable thing. And they get mad, you know, and they're like, oh my God, you know, they're taking my money, you know, our church's money, and they've got a pleasurable thing. Like, why aren't they spending that on necessities? And it really is this incredibly sickening idea that, right, if you are poor, which, you know, we've talked a lot about the ideology that, you know, that blames people for their own poverty and their laziness and stupidity and all that. So that's kind of behind that. And so then if you are poor, which you must have gotten to because of your lazy and stupidity, you know, if you get 10 bucks and then you actually like do something nice for yourself with that 10 bucks, that's then a further evil and moral badness that you're doing. And it's revolting. I mean, it's absolutely revolting. And again, like the defense of Scrooge, right, which the Wall Street Journal doesn't get is sort of weird. Like these folks out of these Christian churches do not get, you know, that somehow criticizing somebody for doing something nice for themselves is a horrible thing to do. They really don't see that at all. I've seen that over and over and over and over again.
And it messes you up. Like, so speaking for myself, like I feel like crap all the time because of money. Cause I grew up poor, or at least poor within the American context. Right. And so this is, you know, I had a friend post about this, like when you grow up that way, you feel guilty when you have money. Like, mm-hmm. I feel guilty all the time, especially because I have to fundraise for it. So this idea, like, my wife feels like this. If we go out to a restaurant, it's like, what if someone sees us eating at a restaurant? Like, I used to think this about this all the time. Like, they'll mm-hmm. someone who donates money to me will look at it and say, how dare he, you know, not get just a salad? because you feel like you have to justify yourself to people, right? Yep. Now, wealthy yeah. people, this is how the twisted logic works. Wealthy people don't think that they have to justify their wealth to people because they operate under this lie that they earned it all.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so yeah. this kind of logic infiltrates every area of our life.
Yeah.
It comes out and people defend it, even if yeah. it doesn't serve them.
Yeah, and as you say, Ceres, I mean, it's both this puritanical theology and this sadism, you know, and it really is this psychological mechanism where, you know, you feel justified in projecting all of your hatred onto these other folks. And often what's interesting is that I think that a lot of the negativity that is projected is a result of the fact that if you are somebody that has, you know, kind of made it in society, and I'm not talking now about the super rich, I'm talking about, you know, middle class, upper middle class people, there is something about the system that everybody hates, right? I mean, everybody hates the fact that you're subservient and having to work in these idiotic jobs. Everybody hates the fact that you know, we have these internalized self-hatreds and all these different things. And so we just project that onto people then that have nothing. And it's this idea of like, oh my God, you know, I hate my life and my work and all this stuff. And now I see somebody who's not doing, you know, what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to project that negativity onto them. That's awful. Oh, Heather
writes, my sister is a missionary in Belize.
Great. Does she speak Spanish?
I hope she speaks the language there, which is
yes.
unless it's an indigenous language. Patricia writes, worthy and unworthy poor myth. That's the thing. This one of my favorite quotes from Dorothy Day is that the gospel for like forever destroys the distinction between the deserving and undeserving poor. And so it's funny, like as Christians, you know, you think we would get that message, but really it's not about this is where the logic gets twisted in American Christianity in particular, where we focus on the act of charity, not on the poor. So it's, you do the act of charity as part of your own piety. You don't do it because out of love for the poor. And so if the poor people don't show proper gratitude or deference, or subservience or kindliness, whatever, then they didn't deserve that charity, that you should give that charity somewhere else because it has nothing to do with them. It has everything to do with you. Just so destructive, and it taints everything about our Christianity, and including our idea of what grace actually means, because it becomes this disembodied ideal rather than something that you practice. Julia writes, when middle-class people pamper themselves, we call it self-care. When the poor do it to ease suffering, we call it irresponsible. If we only evaluate things through the lens of fiscal responsibility, we miss what chronic trauma, anxiety, and scarcity do to people. And I'm not sure if this is a quote from Judy Wu Dominic, or if you're tagging them, it doesn't show through on these posts. But so either way, it's a great and sad statement. Patricia writes, my ex-husband objected to me getting reduced lunch prices for our kids. Guess who he voted for? I remember I used to feel ashamed when we'd get SNAP as a kid. And then like when my wife and I, for a while, we were on SNAP and WIC and stuff like that. And I felt ashamed of that too. Like, even though at the time I was a full-on leftist and I still felt ashamed, like somehow we were mm-hmm. both taking advantage of the system because we're not like those other people who somehow really need it. There was that kind of thing. But then also this idea that there's something shameful to need it at all.
Yeah. Well, and so again, all of this ideology that we're lifting up here and this bad theology, and this bad economics and all this stuff, that's what then gets sort of propelled into the political system. Mm-hmm. And all these people that we send to Washington, then they act that out for us.
Right? Yeah.
You know, and it's the way that we've talked a lot about how, you know, people, white people pay to export their violence, right, and create the police system who then do their violence for them. So in the same way, we project and pay for all of this economic inequality and hatred of people that end up poor through no fault of their own. And, you know, and so we pay for these people to do our violence onto society as a whole from an economic point of view.
Yep.
And, you know, we pay for these people to go to Washington and to act this out. And they do it over and over and over and over again. And, you know, a number of people finally have, in the last couple of years, have started lifting this up in terms of talking about, you know, people say, well, the system isn't working. It's like, no, the system is working perfectly. Yeah. It's working exactly the way it's designed. And we need to stop saying that it's not working. It is working. It's working for the people that it's supposed to work for.
You know, and so
which is why the billionaires have a trillion more dollars in the midst of this pandemic.
And we think that they earned it and it's theirs by right. And so we have these internal scripts that we project out and that becomes the system. And the system then reinforces and puts into us an internal script. And so it's this vicious feedback loop. And, you know, this is why, again, spirituality is such an important part of resistance, because we can talk about Marxist restructuring and consciousness raising to kind of confront the system. But to me, the spiritual practices are about being able to look at these things and do the inner work so that we can do the outer work in a way that makes sense. Because it's not, otherwise it's just, you know, eventually these things come to a head and violence erupts. This is what Marx, Franz Fanon, a lot of people talk about. Eventually the contradictions of the system are exposed enough in it. And we'd like to get at this before it just explodes. I mean, that's right. Kind of the hope for spiritual practices, is that we can have a better revolution than the kind that will inevitably erupt in a very messy and hard to balance kind of way. Gus writes, I wonder if we talked regularly about the suicide rate amongst those in extreme poverty, if we might think differently about the poor treating themselves well from time to time. That's a good point. Just saw the other day, 50% of unhoused folks are reporting suicidal ideation in the last year.
Yeah. I mean, that doesn't surprise me at all. It would be great to talk about that. That could easily just get sucked into the same logic. It's like, well, you know, if they weren't being so irresponsible and they weren't, you know, ending up wasting their money and being unhoused, then they wouldn't feel suicidal, right? I mean, it's always so easy if that always is turned back onto yourself, onto the people, you know, then you don't penetrate that dissociative kind of deflection away from humanity, you know. And I mean, we should be feeling horrible about these things, right? We there should be some compassion, not just individually, but systemic compassion that arises. Like, of course we don't want these people living outside. Of course we don't want 13 million people kicked out of their homes as a result of the pandemic. I mean, that should just be a no-brainer. Right. And the fact that it isn't is a reflection of that heartlessness that is endemic to the system.
Julia writes, I always got in trouble for not performing, quote unquote, gratitude on hand.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Patricia writes, in fact, the earned income credit is a most successful program, and it's what the IRS targets for abuse because it's impossible to fight. Rich people can fight their audits.
Right. Yep. Yeah, exactly. And interestingly enough, you know, as time has gone on, fewer and fewer rich people even get audited. Right. And so they just do whatever they do. But, all right. Well, we've blazed through another half an hour.
Indeed.
Great to have you guys with us. And yeah, it'd be nice if we got some different people in office. That's not easy to do.
And remember, kids, if you take your $600 stimulus check and invest it, you too can be a billionaire.
There you go.
The journey to $1 billion starts with a single step.
Starts with a single penny.
Yeah.
All right. See y'all later. Thank you.